But now John McVicker says, we had an office the size of this room with two desks in it, and Mr. Snyder's desk was at one end and mine was at the other. And we did our business in the same room, and this was an unusual case, and I recall the conversation. This is why I called my chapter, Who's Minding This Store? One says they had two separate rooms and the door might have been open and there were cubby holes. The other says we had one great big room so you couldn't help but hear because all our desks were in one room. And he said, I had no further contact with Oswald after October the 31st, 1959, McVicker said, when he entered the embassy. And to the best of my recollection, I never laid eyes on Oswald again. Mr. Coleman of the Warren Commission said, did Oswald speak to you at all, or was his conversation with Mr. Snyder? And Mr. McVicker said, I think all his conversation was with Mr. Snyder. As I recall, he said a few words to those of us who were in the office, myself and the secretary, on his way out of the office, probably. But I don't really remember much about that, if he said anything at all. Now, this says nothing about reading the secretary's paper or throwing down his passport to her, having any dialogue, that they would remember all the descriptions that the secretary and her daughter and husband are going to throw out. If she left the office, he might have said something, but I don't recall anything of that at all. Mr. Coleman of the Warren Commission said, I take it that after the October 31st, 59, you had no further contact with Oswald. And McVicker said, that is my recollection, no contact with Oswald. I didn't even recall until after I saw the file that I had interviewed his wife. And to my recollection, I never laid eyes on Oswald. Now, John McVicker, I have to say, is lying through his teeth. He handled the whole paper. His wife didn't meet any of the qualifications or clearances to come to the United States until certain waivers were passed, and there were letters going back and forth from that embassy, get Oswald home. It's the best interest of the United States. The department in San Antonio of Immigration said she doesn't qualify yet. She doesn't meet the standards. And the embassy in Washington, in Moscow, the U.S. embassy, was working with Marina Oswald, pressing her, and he says that until the assassination, he didn't even remember having handled her papers. There aren't that many Russian wives coming to the United States. Now, Richard Snyder, in Volume 5, told him to come back. He said, I told him that the consulate was closed, and I didn't have a secretary there that day to prepare the papers. And if he wanted to come back during normal business hours, I'd go through with him. That if he wanted to give up his citizenship, he said, come back on normal business hours. Well, Oswald appears on a Saturday at the American Embassy, and he never appears again until July 61, when he's ready to get his papers to come home and begin the wheels moving. But he calls his normal business hours, aren't there? The secretary isn't there. Congressman Ford said, did he converse with any other member of the staff, to your knowledge, during that first visit? Because the other visits are later in 62 when he's to come home. Snyder says, no, not at this time. He definitely did not. Gerald Ford is asking, any member of the staff of the embassy? No, he did not. Well, Commander Hallett remembers Oswald distinctly, and so does his wife and child, and they were members of the U.S. Navy. You see, but the Warren Commission is devious. They separate the Navy from the embassy staff. So if he doesn't meet the staff, he could still be meeting with someone from the Navy. You see, they don't say that, is there anyone else of government officials? They say, did he converse with any other member of the staff? He says, no, not this time. And I don't think he did during this time I was there. As far as I know, he had no knowledgeable conversation, then, he says, with anyone there. With anyone there. Actually, there was only, when he came in, two officers, McVicker, myself, and the time I left, three officers with whom he might have talked. Now, John Snyder is saying there were three, but the Warren Commission doesn't say who was the third officer. You see, Phil, so I'm asking, was the third officer the one that ends up in the White House, November the 22nd, 1963? You see, I cross-file in my own research under coincidence, under Navy intelligence, under Oswald in the Soviet Union, and witnesses not called, in order to get a pattern of operation to understand the size of the Warren Report. You have to take these subjects and put them into columns like mathematical problems. So he said there were three officers with whom he might have talked, and it is conceivable that either of the other two officers would have talked to him, knowing it is inconceivable, then, he says, that the others would have talked to him, knowing my interest in the case, or if I were not there, somebody would have done so without making a memo for the file for me. So it's inconceivable that anyone would have talked to him. And he goes into the only two Americans that did talk to Lee Harvey Oswald at that later in Russia before he went on to Minsk. It was Priscilla Johnson and Aline Mosby, the newspaper women. No mention of Mr. Hallett at all. Now, Richard Snyder gives a description of Lee Harvey Oswald in 1959. He was neatly presentable dressed. He had a nice physical appearance. He was well-shaven, confident-looking. He was extremely sure of himself. He seemed to know what his mission was. He took charge of the conversation from the beginning. I believe he put his passport on my desk. I'm not sure. I may have asked for it. Now, Mrs. Howell is telling how he slammed it arrogantly on her desk. He's saying he either put it on my desk or I asked for it. In general, his attitude was quite arrogant, he says, but he repeated he was neatly dressed, well composed, a respectable-looking young man. They asked him if the letter he wrote to the embassy 3 days later could have been his because it was such a good letter. He says he writes a good letter. I would not say it was beyond his capability. He strikes me as an intelligent man. He was articulate, quite intelligent. I don't think from what I saw of him that the letter is beyond his capacity to have written. Now, Snyder said he had no previous knowledge of the presence of Oswald in the USSR. He gave me a written statement, which he handed, which he also mentioned orally, on why he came. He gave me a letter and his passport, and the total interview was in my hands. He said he kept his passport, and then Navy attachés at the embassy sent a telegram to the Navy Department telling them Oswald, a Marine, had offered radar information to the Soviets. Now, Snyder was shown a telegram from the Navy attaché at the embassy, but he denied that it was ever shown to him when it went off. The Navy attaché was sending telegrams saying this ex-Marine has offered radar information to the Soviets. But Snyder, again, does not mention who the Navy attaché is or if the Navy attaché, he rules out that he could have seen or met Oswald. But Hallett says he knew him well, you see. And Snyder, in charge of the embassy, denied that the wire sent from the Navy was ever shown to him. Oswald came in, he repeated, and either placed his passport on the desk or the table. And then he left Moscow in December 59 and went down to Minsk. Senator Cooper said, "Did he talk to any other people in the embassy besides you?" And Snyder said, "Not to my knowledge, no, sir." John McVicker says he was in the room and a third man was there. And Senator Cooper said, "Do you know of any other members of the embassy staff that talked to him?" And Snyder said, "I have no reason to believe that anyone else talked to him other than myself at this time. Up until that time that I left Moscow, Oswald was my baby, and I don't think anyone else talked to him in the embassy." Now, you see, the point is this, that these people can be very sure. I'm going to show you how the Warren Report carries Oswald in the Soviet Union as not being an agent. Because Oswald didn't talk to anyone in the American embassy doesn't mean he didn't talk to naval attachés outside the embassy. If he was a Navy intelligence, they swear that he only came into the embassy 2 times. But he could be meeting other people because the people remembered him. His daughter, the man, commander's daughter remembered him. His wife remembered him. And so that they're very sure that Oswald couldn't have seen anybody in the embassy, but what's that got to do with it? A lot of people saw Oswald in the Soviet Union outside the embassy.
So you're wondering again why Commander Hallett wasn't called as witness?
Absolutely.
And are you saying then that these references that are made saying that Oswald didn't talk to anyone else is a direct cover-up of the fact that he was meeting or had conversations with Commander Hallett of the Navy?
Absolutely. Yeah, see, the Warren Report, now we're going to get to the Warren Report because a lot of people still wonder. It's very difficult to understand the amount of research that I have done or the way I went about it. And I began with the original source, which was the Warren Report, which is 800 pages, and I read sections of that which were particularly interesting to me, such as Oswald in the Soviet Union or in the Marines or in the Dallas-Fort Worth area or in Mexico. Oswald as a person, his modus operandi. And then I read the commission hearings, the 15 volumes where witnesses were called, who had Axis or Medley Harvey Oswald, and the simple discrepancies like the John McVicker versus Snyder thing in the embassy is so basic. One says he wasn't present, the other said he had to be because they shared the same room. Somebody isn't telling the truth, obviously. So then I go to the commission exhibits. Now, the Warren Report has several sections on Oswald in the Soviet Union. They carry it in four different sections. One in Chapter 6, showing there was no conspiracy in the Soviet Union as a Russian agent. Then they show he was not a U.S. agent. Then they have a section called Oswald's Motives in Chapter 7, where he goes to the Soviet Union. And in the appendix, appendix number 7, they go into the biography of Lee Harvey Oswald from birth to death, and there's a section on the Soviet Union, and then there's appendix in volume 15 on his renouncing his citizenship. And so I'm going into what the Warren Report says, because this is the published version, and I'm trying to show you some of the discrepancies in the commission hearings. The conspiracy section of the Warren Report says the commission found nothing in the circumstances of Oswald's entry into the Soviet Union that indicate that he was an agent of the USSR. Well, that's true. It says that most reliable information concerning the period that Oswald spent in Moscow comes from the embassy and two American newspaper reporters, Eileen Mosby and Priscilla Johnson. Now, he saw Priscilla Johnson for 5 hours, and he saw Eileen Mosby for 2 hours. He went to the embassy on October the 31st to renounce his citizenship. He spoke to Richard Snyder, who refused to accept his renunciation. He would have to return the complete necessary papers, they told him, and they told him to come back when they were open for business. The Warren Report says he would have to return to complete the papers of renunciation. Oswald gave the council his passport and declared that he had volunteered Soviet government information about radar as a Marine. Now, that is the Warren Report on Oswald in the conspiracy section. It doesn't mention Richard Snyder. It doesn't mention Admiral Hallett at all. It leaves those names out and just says he saw Richard Snyder and he did not return to renunciate himself as a citizen. He just left his passport at the embassy while he was living in the Soviet Union. Now, on page 325 in that same section, on Oswald, there's a section to prove Oswald was not a U.S. agent. It says, in quotes, Oswald returned to the American passport to the embassy in Moscow on October 59. Thereafter, while in the Soviet Union, Oswald had numerous contacts with the American embassy, both in person and through correspondence. Now, I don't know where these numerous contacts come up there, because he went once in October 59, and then later when he wanted to return in 62.
Wasn't it in some of the testimony that it said he was only there once or twice?
That's right.
Once on that day that he tried to renounce his citizenship, and the other time
to get the papers to come back.
When he wanted to leave the Soviet Union.
That's right.
But within the Warren Report, it says he had numerous contacts.
Well, because various men were writing different chapters of the Warren Report, I have a whole, it's a 9-page document by John J. McCloy, who was supposed to write this chapter, and that was the one we read on the air once with no verification of any of this. Different men were writing it. So somebody put in the numerous contacts, and they didn't check it out because he only had two. But if they mean written contacts with the embassy, it says through correspondence, he had two personal. And then the Warren Report said he received a loan from the State Department to cover his costs home.
Well, this numerous contacts thing still sticks in my mind.
He's wide open.
Do you think it's possible that just as this could be something that should have said two contacts, that it could be that somebody writing that particular chapter had seen other documents that aren't, you know, within the commission documents that showed that he had met many times, and that in writing this chapter, he accidentally put it in, and it was pulled out of the documents?
Now you're being, this is the thing that in the National Archives, locked up for 75 years, there are many, many documents, Oswald and the Soviet Union. That's right. That's where the problem lies, is that somebody has seen the documents that are locked up, as well as the ones that are being declassified now, and the word slipped, numerous contacts. That's right. Then the Warren Report goes on to say, officials who were directly involved with dealing with Oswald case on these matters have testified before the commission. Now, one of those, Commander Hallett, never testified before the commission, but they go on, Director John J. McCone of the CIA and Deputy Director Richard Helm of CIA testified that no one connected with the CIA ever interviewed Oswald or communicated with him in any way. Now, Health, Education, and Welfare has this document I read of Fed Jones saying that they're to look out for Oswald, take care of his way home, and so forth, the money home. Navy commander stationed in the White House, right at the time Kennedy was killed, had contact with Oswald in the Soviet Union. The State Department letters state that he was stationed in the Soviet Union as part of the Marines, and who's who in the CIA lists John McVicker and Richard Snyder. And yet, under oath, John McCone and Richard Helms, now head of the Central Intelligence Agency, say that no one connected with the CIA ever interviewed Oswald or communicated with him in any way.
Well, the person who's going to say, well, that's full of holes, as far as citing these as evidence that he did have contact with the CIA, is going to say, well, who's who in the CIA? That's published in East Germany. That's obviously a lie. And what State Department document says that he was stationed in the USSR?
Oh, there's
as a Marine.
In the commission hearings in the 16 volumes, one of the things that always struck me so funny are the things of Oswald, U.S. Marines in the USSR. And I thought, well, what has the Marines got to do? How much of a Navy do we have in the USSR?
But was he stationed?
Well, that's the way the paper reads it. It mentions the some of the State Department, the Navy papers that are in the 16 volumes, have him in the Marines in the USSR. And then they've got big black words crossing out all kinds of information on the pages that's censored. They published the letters and they blacked out the words. So,
But stationed implies that he was sent there, that he's supposed to be there.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. But here we have in volume chapter 7 in the Warren Report under possible motives, they have Oswald, they just mentioned that Oswald went on October the 31st to the American Embassy, and Mr. Snyder was the second secretary. In the history of the motive of why he would commit the murder, they just said that he went to the embassy and presented his passport to Richard Snyder. Again, no mention of McVicker or the third man or anything, anybody else being the embassy. The secretary, the wife of the particular man we're talking about, in the commander in the Navy, they don't mention who the secretary was at all, Mr. Hallett's wife. Now, under Appendix 7, under the biography of Lee Harvey Oswald, they said he took a taxi to the American embassy, and when the receptionist asked him to sign the register, he laid his passport on the desk and said he wanted to renounce his American citizenship. And Richard Snyder was summoned and invited Oswald into his office. They asked Richard Snyder the question about Lee Harvey Oswald signing the guest register at the American Embassy with his name on the register. And he said, no, in lieu, when a person visits the American Embassy, in his testimony, he said they can, if they exchange their passport with you and leave it with you, that is identification of a signature on the book. They didn't want the name on the book. And this is another way of keeping Lee Harvey Oswald, you know, he was in the Soviet Union, he was going to be there for a while, and other people coming through may see his name on that book and know what he's doing at the Soviet Union. So as he walks in the door, Appendix 7, that's page 693 of the Warren Report, says that he went to the receptionist. Now that's the wife of Commander Hallett. And they asked him to sign the register, and he laid his passport on the desk and said he can renounce his citizenship. Now, Richard Snyder said that's a formality at the embassy, and John McVicker testified that Oswald seemed to be coached in all his legal rights and all the things to do as he entered or expatriate. He left all the doors open, you know, to return back to America. This is quite different from what she says that she remembers. The arrogance, the peculiar density of his eyes, the way he would snatch the New York Herald Tribune from his desk, and the way he slammed down that passport and was arrogant. This is quite different from laying it there as a formality in the embassy. And in Appendix 7, there's nothing about laying this thing down, slamming it down. It was a formality that you use at the embassy, that he put this particular document on the table. Now, the Warren Report says Oswald seldom left the hotel in Moscow. His routine was broken only by another interview by the USSR passport office. And then he had a visit from somebody named Rima who gave him lessons in Russian. He was called to the Soviet passport office and told he's being sent to Minsk. Now, the Warren Report, in showing that there's no conspiracy or no contact with anybody, emphasizes over and over again that he only went to the embassy once. He didn't return. He only met two newspaper women. So where he was meeting Commander Hallett, you see, he's to go to Minsk then and disappear. And the John McVicker and Richard Snyder say he never returned. And they claim that until 1961, they claim, and we know this is not true, that they had no knowledge, the embassy or anybody, where Lee Harvey Oswald was. So I pose the question this hour, where did Commander Hallett and his daughter, even if the wife was a receptionist, and she's telling you how he used to take her papers, which implied many visits, but where did his daughter and he know Lee Harvey Oswald from to pick up, you know, on the day of the assassination? Now, appendix, the Warren Report says the American Embassy in Moscow had not heard from Oswald after it received his letter dated November the 3rd until February 13th, 1961, where he asked to return home for the United States. Now, in January...
It says the American Embassy in Moscow had not heard from Oswald until or after it received his letter dated November 59, and yet the Warren Commission report a little bit back you quoted saying
was in contact with
numerous contacts, both personal contact and through correspondence
with the agency. That's right.
That doesn't coincide.
Well, no, nothing about the Warren report does. We have to keep reiterating that for people who wonder what dialogue assassination is or picked
those,
up in the
those two statements just are opposed to each other.
Yes, well, it's good to read this out loud. I mean, you and I sharing information and hopefully people picking it up. That's what I'm trying to point out. That's the basis of my research, to find out where the truth does lie. And you can find truth if you go to every avenue of each one speaking. You can narrow it down somewhere. Now, in January 1961, Marguerite Oswald took a train to Washington, D.C. and called the White House and said, my son is a CIA, and he's in Russia, and I would like to have contact with him. He's been away a long time. And the State Department called her, and she came right over to see, have an interview with men in the State Department. And then a diplomatic pouch was sent to the Soviet Union in February 1961, February 13th. And then Oswald wrote a letter saying, I would like to return to the United States. I want my passport back and full citizenship. I didn't renunciate my citizenship, and I want full protection. Now, we'll do another show in the future. On February the 28th, Oswald said he would return to the American Embassy. He was ready to come back to the United States. March the 17th, 1961, he met Marina Oswald.
How does the Warren Report handle the statement by Oswald's mother about her son being in the CIA?
Well, they handle it like they handle everything else. They ignore it. She was a witness for the Warren Commission, Volume 1. Her testimony is accurate. It's historically valid. What are you going to handle if an intelligence agency overthrows the government through all these complicated methods? A few people who are in the know are going to speak up. You handle it by ignoring it. They just ignore her.
They did not produce anything to challenge that?
Well,
any evidence?
Yeah, we could go into the way they screwed around. They say, of course, he wasn't an agent. We asked Richard Helms or John, Mr. McCone. Of course he wasn't an agent. Richard Helms would know. You know, and that's the way it's left.
But what would Richard Helms say?
Well, Appendix 15 of the Warren Report on Oswald attempting to renounce his U.S. citizenship. Citizenship says American officials in Moscow had no knowledge of his arrival. He went to the embassy October 31st, 1959. He placed his passport on the receptionist's desk and informed her he came to dissolve his citizenship, and she immediately summoned the counsel, Richard Snyder, who invited Oswald into his office. Now, I'm repeating what the Warren Report has, these sections on Oswald at the embassy in different chronological order, on the motive or whether it's an agent or his life. Now, each one has the same story. It has nothing about his grabbing her newspapers, having an altercation, their chance to really know whether he was arrogant or what his personality was like. You see, they remembered him vividly, getting back to Commander and Joan Hallett and their daughter Caroline. They talked of Moscow. They remembered him vividly. This is the Manchester book. All three remembered his face, the way he would snatch the New York Herald Tribune from Joan's desk. This is what they remembered, and they remembered how he slammed down his passport in arrogance, and they remembered that Sidi Malcontent, or Witty Malcontent. They had a distinct memory about his obnoxiousness. But in Appendix 15 of the Warren Report, he placed it again on the desk, and she summoned immediately. There was no chance to read the Herald Tribune or to go through all the things that he was doing. And he went into the office, so Carolyn, the daughter, couldn't remember Oswald that well, because from then on, Snyder says he was my baby and no one else saw him. So if he was his baby, how did the whole family, the Hallett family, get into it? Now, if she had the passport, there's a question. She says she has the passport. Snyder said he always has the passport. Where was the commander? Where was Caroline? Why doesn't the Warren Report tell you the receptionist's husband is going to be receiving the phone calls at the White House when Kennedy was killed? The Warren Report says in the room with Snyder was his assistant, John McVicker, who observed what ensued. This is the Warren Report, Appendix 15. Snyder says McVicker said he was Snyder says he was alone with Oswald. McVicker said he was present. The Warren Report says McVicker observed. I have to show you that back and forth there is no accuracy in what they're saying, and the Warren Report chooses the testimony they want. Then it says, having taken the passport back from the receptionist, Oswald placed it on Snyder's desk. He walked in. She asked him to sign the book. He wouldn't sign the book, you see. He put it on her desk. He took it back and put it on Snyder's desk. Snyder did not permit Oswald to renounce his citizenship at that time, but told him if he would return when the embassy was open, that would be completed. And Oswald never returned to the Soviet embassy until he was ready to return home to the United States.
Now, what's all this? Now, if Oswald met with other people that the Warren Report never refers to, and if you accept the premise that Oswald was sent to the Soviet Union, the question is, why was he sent there, if indeed he was sent there?
Well, that would take, again, we have to say, we should do a five-hour show like New York, except I was exhausted. The whole thing was that Gary Powers wrote in his book that he believed Oswald was instrumental in bringing down the U-2 plane. With his radar knowledge, he was capable of bringing down the U-2 plane. Now, bringing down the U-2 flight ended the summit conference that President Eisenhower was to have with the Russian government. And a lot of people believe the summit conference should have gone on. We should have admitted our error. The summit, you see, if Oswald was an agent of the intelligence agency, and if our Central Intelligence Agency didn't want coexistence with the Soviet Union, they wanted the Cold War going, they would fly the U-2 just prior to the summit conference, bring it down, and, you know, then if the Russians weren't going to bring the U-2 down or bring it down, Oswald, with his radar knowledge, could bring down that U-2 flight of Gary Powers, breaking the summit conference, the Cold War would continue, and the purpose would be achieved by the people that are in power that do not want coexistence with the Soviet Union.
But did the assassination have anything to do with it at that time, or was that plan spawned later?
Well, Oswald's planning of the assassination and using Lee Harvey Oswald, I know from the moment he left the Soviet Union, I know the assassination was planned in the 60s when John Kennedy took oath, and I have an article on that coming out in The Realist, the 13th anniversary issue of The Realist, on the planning stages. The title of the article is How Richard Nixon Came to Power, and it's on the political assassinations that the machinery was set up to kill anybody who didn't go along with the existing State Department policy of the Dulles brothers. And if Alan Dulles was the chief of our CIA and the overall planner of it, and if Oswald was an agent of the intelligence system, they could botch the complete summit conference. Now, in summary, what I'm trying to say is that there is a document that came out of the National Archives in 1971 that has to do with a commander, Hallett, in the White House. He was at the control room at the mansion of the White House the day Kennedy was killed. Commander Hallett, his wife, his daughter Caroline, remember Oswald in the Soviet Union. They were never called as witnesses. I'm trying to show that, well, it's hard to summarize. There is so much to point out. The commission doesn't do its job by calling the proper witnesses. Oswald was part of Navy intelligence. The State Department did send him over with radar work. Gary Powers mentions it in his book, and in the archives are documents Oswald's access to the U-2. It's a complicated thing, but people knew Oswald and the Soviet Union were in the White House the night of the murder.
Dialogue Assassination with political research specialist Mae Brussel here on KLRB. I'm Phil Kogan.